Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope you all are doing well. I'm excited to get to share God's word with you. Before we do, I forgot to make an announcement, so I'm going to make it now. I had it on a separate piece of paper, and so I forgot to read it here. Joel and Clark have both requested to take a sabbatical from their duties as deacons for the summer. They have both worked extremely hard, especially over the past 2 years, and they could use a time of rest and rejuvenation. With a lighter load of church activities planned over the summer, this is the perfect time for this sabbatical. They have been diligent to have their affairs in order so that nothing will fall through the cracks during this period, and all outstanding responsibilities have been delegated to others. The elders have given this plan their full endorsement and support. So feel free to come to us if you have any questions about that. All right, we are beginning a brand new sermon series today. We are calling it Aerial Perspectives. Where we were in the previous series was we were discussing the story of the Bible from the beginning to the end. What is the story of the Bible about? And so we talked about all the different things that are in that story. And now we want to take that entire story and find some themes, some threads that go through the entire story. And we want to zone in on those and look at those. So we're calling this Aerial Perspectives, the 30,000-foot view, where we're looking at some foundational pieces to our Christian faith. And these pieces, having these pieces in place, is going to allow us to build on a foundation moving forward. So in this sermon series, we're going to discuss some of these major themes, some of the things like, who are we as humans? Who is God? And what does he want from us? What is the spiritual realm and what is happening there? How do we interact with it? How do we understand what the devil's tactics are against us? And how do we put a defense up against that? How do we view the Old Testament now that we're in the New Testament? Now that we're looking from the New Covenant's perspective, how do we understand the Old Testament and the Old Covenant? When we're reading Psalms, is that for us? Is that for somebody else? Does it apply? How does it apply? How do we gain God's favor and his blessing? What do we do with suffering? How do we deal with science, the fields of science and psychology and what they're telling us? These are some of the topics that we're going to be discussing in this sermon series. And I'm thrilled because we're hitting some really, really important stuff. Today, I've entitled this one, Enlightenment. This is going to be a sermon on God's enlightenment for us. But first, a couple stories. So when I was in junior high, I thought it would be a good idea to try to date a girl. That made sense to me. I thought that was a good idea. I had one in mind, and so I got my courage up, and I was ready to do this thing, man. I'm ready. All right, let's go. Let's face the fear. Let's conquer it, and let's go, and we're going to ask her out, and it's going to go great, because how could it not, right? It's going to go good. So I go, and I'm nervous, but it's like a good nervous. It's an excited nervous, and I see her after class, and she's walking with a friend. So I come up. I'm coming up strong and confident, and I say, "Will you go out with me?" Something along those lines. And at that moment, I could see her hesitate, and that didn't feel so good, right? So, like, I was already, like, she's ready to say, yes, I would love to be going out with you. That sounds good. She didn't do that right away. So what happened to my confidence? Just deflated so fast. So what do you do when that happens? Well, you just react. You're in the moment. So here's the way it came out. Will you go out with me? Pause. Please? 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 What is that? What was that? That came out of my mouth. How does that possibly be what comes out of my mouth? You're supposed to, as the guy, you're supposed to be the confident one. Like, yeah, it was gone, man. It was nothing. There was like no chance at that point. She said yes. And then after the next period, her friend came and said she didn't want to go out with me. And I was like, yeah, that probably makes some sense. So yeah, please. Yeah, guys, don't do that, all right? You young men in here, that is not a good strategy. So if you're feeling that, just shut it down, man. Just shut that down. Do not let that come out, because it is embarrassing. It is embarrassing to do that in front of other people. So I had another embarrassing situation. So when I was young, I was really shy. I was really a shy kid. I liked school, but at school, I was pretty shy. And so we had this assignment where you had to study some American figure, and then you gave a speech for the class. And you were supposed to have some kind of a costume. And I picked Geronimo, and I was pretty happy about that. And I was walking in again, confident, feeling like this is going to be good. And I got like some vest, like a brown vest, and that was supposed to make me look like an Indian or Native American of some kind. And so, I've got that, and I walk into the class, and everybody else has these amazing costumes. I've got like this vest, and this guy's got like the George Washington outfit with the hat and everything. And everybody else has these costumes. I felt so embarrassed. I was not prepared. I didn't look right. I was like, oh man, these kids got excited. They got into this, right? I don't fit here at all. And so I'm up there up on stage, and I'm like sheepish, and I'm shy, and I'm giving my speech like this and real quiet. Right? That's what happens when you get embarrassed. When you get embarrassed, right? You don't want to be up there. You don't want to be up on stage. You don't want to be telling people or talking to people. You don't want anyone looking at you, right? It's a horrible feeling. I hate that feeling. And now my job is up here on stage, right? It's a little different, but I don't feel embarrassed, you know? Like when I'm up here, I don't feel embarrassed. I don't feel like I'm in a wrong spot. Because this is who God has made me to be, and this is the gifting that he's given me. And so I feel like I'm confident. I feel like I'm bold and strong, and I'm free up here. Like, this is my home. This is what I do. This is what I'm good at. So I don't have that feeling of embarrassment. Unless I maybe call our older folks elderly, the 55 and older group. That I felt embarrassed about. But outside of that, right? Outside of that mess up, I feel good of being up here. I don't feel that same embarrassment. But gosh, I hate it. I hate it. I don't want to ever feel embarrassed, and I try to avoid it whenever possible. But there are limits to embarrassment, right? It only goes so far. It only reaches so far, and then it stops. Embarrassment has a relative, though, that is far more deadly, and that is shame. Embarrassment is a mistake, right? You made a mistake in what you did. And that's unfortunate. It doesn't feel good. Shame, on the other hand, screams that the core of your being is worthy of rejection. And it doesn't get more demoralizing than that. That's what shame does to you. That's what shame feels like. Shame is our shadow, and our identities are intertwined. From our genesis, we have been born with shame. In the garden, there was freedom, but with the fall, shame flooded our souls. The defining characteristic of fallen humanity, of you, of me, of everyone you have ever met and ever will meet, and all of their descendants, is shame. What we will call the shadow. Our history assures our bondage to the shadow. When Adam and Eve sinned, the very first experience, the very first feeling, the very first phenomena that comes across them is they have this overwhelming torrent of shame come upon them. Before they sin, Genesis says this in chapter 2, verse 25. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. That's the way they started out. That's the way God created them, naked and unashamed. But notice what happens when they sin in verse 7 of chapter 3. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. Shame. Shame enters here. Their immediate reaction is to cover their nakedness. That's what they feel like must happen. That's their reaction. What is this shame that they feel? It is relational, and it is connected with vulnerability and the possibility of pain or exploitation. Before the fall, they were naked, intimate with God and each other. There was trust and openness. They were wide open with each other. But there was no possibility of pain or punishment. So this openness didn't harm them at all. But with the fall, their eyes, metaphorically, were opened and they knew that they were naked. They all of a sudden recognized, they didn't recognize their nakedness before this. Their nakedness, their openness, their trust wasn't known or seen, even though it was there before that. A fish doesn't know it lives in the ocean. It just exists. You have to explain to a child that they're breathing air. It's so inundated in them, they don't even recognize that it's happening. These people, Adam and Eve, were naked and they didn't even realize it until they ate the knowledge of good and evil. And they became aware of it. And simultaneously, when they ate and became aware of their openness, they also recognized the immediate guilt that came in. So simultaneously, they notice the openness and they notice the guilt and they notice the vulnerability and they freak out because they recognize, man, I gotta hide. I gotta hide now. I gotta cover this. This is shameful. Shame is the experience of awareness of vulnerability to pain, exploitation, and or rejection by another. Let me go over that again. Shame is the experience of awareness of vulnerability to pain, exploitation, and or rejection by another person. A good example to describe this shame is when you have a dream. You're dreaming and you're up on stage, you're giving a presentation for your class, or your work, or you're in public, and all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, everyone's looking at me. Why are they? I'm naked. That dream, you've ever had that dream? What is that feeling that you have when that happens, when you realize, oh my goodness, I'm naked and didn't realize it? Shame comes over you and it's overwhelming. It's a horrible feeling, isn't it? That's what that feeling is, that feeling of shame. It's a feeling that you, your nakedness, are grounds for social rejection and ridicule. Your nakedness is worthy of being ridiculed by other people, and so you want to cover that up. What's the immediate reaction to shame? Let's look at what Adam and Eve do. This is exactly what they do. They sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings. You cover, man. You hide. You don't want any of that. Awareness and visibility make you vulnerable. So the attempt is to cover or hide the cause of shame from others. That's what you want to do. Just cover it up. There are many layers of shame that you may encounter in your life. And it begins in childhood. As an infant, you don't care at all, right? You're just stark naked and you don't care. You're just running around. But somewhere around the time where you start to realize that society and social things and what your friends do matters and what they think of you matters, at that time the child starts to realize, no, I want to be wearing clothes and I want to be covered. You come to be aware of that. And then you got to go through adolescence, and that's a terrifying gauntlet of social anxiety constantly and shame and feeling that and dealing with that. And then there's all sorts of ways of being rejected and feeling shame when you're an adult, right? This is the process that we go through. We are desperate to conceal our shadow. How do you get rid of a shadow? You got a shadow. How do you get rid of it? Well, a young child, they may try to put their hands over the shadow. It's not here. It's not here, but the shadow still is over top of their hands. They're not able to stop that, right? So they try that out. It doesn't work. You can attempt to distract other people, their attention away from the shadow. Hey, don't look at that. Look over here. This is more important. I don't want you to pay attention to my shadow. You can blur the shadow by hiding in the darkness where then everything's dark. And you don't know what's dark and what's my shadow. And so for all you care, they're not looking at your core and they're not seeing your core. And so everything's dark and everything's black. And that's fine with me because then, hey, it works out because you're not looking at who I am. You're not looking at my core. You're looking at a bunch of things. Some are me and some are not. Think about all the ways we try these methods with ourselves and with other people. We try to cover our shadow, our weakness, our vulnerability by covering it with a mask, a facade of invulnerability. I got everything together, man. Everything's great. There's no problem with me. No shame here. You ever worn that mask? We're in control. We're confident. We're powerful. Whatever. Or we can try to distract other people, distract them from looking at us and really seeing us by highlighting our success or our beauty or our job or our relationships, our potential, our status. Look at that. Look at all those things. I got it together, man. Everything's fine. Don't look at my shadow, please. That's what we do. Or sometimes we just bathe our guilt and vulnerability in more darkness. So we go dive into the darkness, right? Because then I don't have to feel bad because no one's really looking at who I am. They're not really seeing my soul. They're not really seeing my shame and my vulnerability because everything's black and everything's dark. And so who cares? I'm safe. Or there's another option. You can shine light directly on the shadow, thereby dispelling it. You can go directly with the light, and the light will get rid of the shadow. But this comes with a cost. And it's a big one. It is the intentional addressing of your weakness and inviting someone in to the deepest part of who you are, where they can do the most damage. That's costly. That is risky. That is dangerous. To allow someone else to shine a light exactly on your deepest part, where you are most vulnerable. Depending on the scenario, this may be the act of the fool and the naive, or the greatest act of bravery you could do. However successful we might be in fooling those around us, there is one area where we cannot fool another about our shadow. There's just no way. We can't fool this one situation. We know deep in our soul that we are guilty before our God. We know it. Before his perfection, our conscience condemns us with shame. This is the great identity crisis for us. God, our creator, stands before us and we feel the weight of guilt and we face a choice of how to respond to that. God is holy. We are not. We feel the weight of our shame. Do we cover the shadow? Do we distract God from it? Do we cover it in more darkness, or do we just exalt in it and stand in our darkness and in our shadow and try to say, God, who cares? It's your fault. You made me this way. Man, Adam tries a number of these tactics. If you look back at the story, he does everything he can possibly do to take that shame and make you look somewhere else. First, he covers himself with leaves. Then he hides. So he covers himself. All right, I'm covering myself. That didn't work. Then he tries to go hide, pretend like he's not going to be found. Then when God confronts him, he misdirects. He blames Eve, and then he actually blames God for giving him Eve, right? He does like the whole gamut. He tries everything he can possibly do. I want you to sense in Adam the desperation and the panic that he has. Right, he's desperate. He feels like he is choking and he needs to get out of that situation. My shadow is out in the open. I am vulnerable. I do not want to be taken advantage of. I do not want the pain of my shame. I need to cover it. Adam's terror is dreadful. Not only do we want to hide from our shame, our flesh loves our wickedness as well. Most people live in the darkness, like roaches love the dark, and when light comes, they like to scurry for the crevices. They're out in the open when it's dark, but when that light comes on, boom, they scurry. They're gone. Jesus declared the same truth in John chapter 3, verses 19 through 20. This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men love the darkness rather than the light, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. Exposure, nakedness, seeing it, being vulnerable. We enter life in the dark and we can't help embracing our tormentor, can we? Make sure to note that it says this is the judgment. There is a reckoning coming, folks. It is inescapable. God sought Adam. Adam didn't get to get away. He couldn't hide from God. God's coming for me, and he's coming for you. Throughout the Old Testament, God is the judge who does not let sin go unpunished, and his judgment upon the wicked will include exposing their shame, symbolized with nakedness. Listen to this, Nahum 3:5. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will lift up your skirts over your face and show to the nations your nakedness and to the kingdoms your disgrace. That is a horrifying picture. Shame before everyone else. That is part of God's judgment. God's judgment continues as a theme in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians 5:10. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. And before the judge, there will be no hiding, folks. Luke chapter 8, verse 17. For nothing is hidden that will not become evident, nor anything secret that will not be made known and come to light. This is coming. It's all going to be out there. Everything. It's going to be exposed. So what's your response? What is your response to the coming exposure and your dealing with nakedness, your shadow? But there's a way out. There's a way out. Thank God there is a way out of that mess. I don't know about you, but going through all of that causes panic and terror and fright and awful feelings, like horrible feelings. But there is a way out. Enlightenment is a common religious theme describing escape from darkness and evil into light and righteousness. Christianity is no different, and they offer an enlightenment. Our form starts with this fear of our guilt and shame. It starts there. It acknowledges it. It starts from that point. Proverbs 1:7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." That's where you start. You recognize your shame. You own it. You don't run from that. We deserve the shame. We have fallen. We are sinful. We have rebelled against God. But where most people flee the light, the enlightened stand and face it. This is the difference, all right? This is what everybody else is doing. They're all running from the fear. They're running from the light. The enlightened person goes and steps into it intentionally, purposefully, walks right into the light. The passage we read in John 3, where men love darkness, is followed in verse 21 by this. John 3, chapter 21. But he who practices the truth comes to the light. This is the act of faith, the act of bravery, the greatest act of courage you could do. To not run from the light or hide our shadow or distract from it, but to put our shadow before the light, naked, bare, exposed, and accept what comes. But why? Why would you do that? Why would you intentionally show your shame out there? Why would you intentionally allow your shadow to be exposed? The enlightened one does not embrace the light as a defiance against the fate. It's coming anyways. It's coming anyways. So whatever, I'm just going to stand here and take it. Defiant. That's not what the enlightened person does. The enlightened person walks into the light and embraces it because they trust the one who is light. They actually trust the light to be a positive for them. They recognize that they are shameful, but coming to the light will be a positive. Whoa. That is counter to everything you feel, everything that you sense inside, that is counter to what the world is doing around you and all the people around that you've seen. This is something that is very difficult to do, to trust that if I come into the light, I will actually be taken care of. In our story, in the story of the Bible, this is the central revelation. At the center of everything that he's talking about, this is the enlightenment. This is the grand idea that you need to accept. This is the way out of all your problems. Although we stand bare before guilt and deserving death, we stand before God, he still invites us to return to his arms and receive his love. That's enlightenment. In all of your nakedness, in all of your barrenness, in all of your shame, you're still invited. He still loves you. God wants his children back, even the naked, shameful ones. The great mental leap that you have to make to receive this enlightenment is to accept, while fully acknowledging your well-deserved shame, that God still wants you all the same. How could anyone make that jump? How could you do that? How could you voluntarily jump into the light? Because of God's character, because of God's history, and because of God's promises. That's why. That's where you go. God's character, he is a loving God, and he wants you back. Hey, God had every chance to smite Adam, like real smite, big time smite. He didn't do it. He left him. He had every chance to knock out Israel, didn't do it. He had every chance when everyone rejected Christ, we could just wipe this whole thing clean and walk away. But what did he do? He didn't do that. Why? Because he still wanted them. He still wanted us. Christian enlightenment. And in fact, here's the clincher about it. Here's the clincher about who God is. The price that he paid to have you was his son. He gave up his son to have you, broken, naked you and me. And he didn't just halfway do it. He did it all the way. Christ had a full death, a full horrifying death. He didn't get started and go, well, this isn't really worth it. No, he went all the way through because he thought it's worth it. That's his character. And that's what he thinks about you. That's how much he wants you. Christian enlightenment is trusting the revelation from God that he knows you are wicked, but wants you anyway. Those that trust walk naked into the light boldly and confidently, yet humbly, because their trust is not in themselves, but in the God who forgives. The enlightened trust the promise that he loves us even in our nakedness. This is the faith that God treasures. Hebrews 11:6 says this, and without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. Obviously, you can't please God if you don't believe he exists, right? That doesn't make any sense. But also, the trust is that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. That's a jump to go, he's actually going to reward me for stepping into the light rather than punishing me for it and hurting me and making me more shameful for it. Enlightened faith believes that he is merciful and forgiving, that he will overlook your rebellion, that he is not mistaken in doing that. He's not naive about who you are. He sees you in all your nakedness, and he loves you all the same. And that if you return and stand in his light, that he will run to embrace you. This isn't a partial embrace. This isn't a, hey, I'll come there when I'm finished this. No, this is a, I'm standing waiting for you, and I will run to embrace you as soon as you return. But how could he love me? He created you. He's your creator. He didn't make a mistake. He knew what was coming. Before you even rebelled, he had a plan to cover your shame. You also know that he loves you because of what he gave up to have you. He gave up his son to gain you. He didn't do that flippantly. He didn't just abandon the plan. He brought it all the way to completion. We can be certain of his love for us because it cost him the life of his son. What about justice? Isn't God just? God is still just, yes. And he has a plan for your sins. He paid the full penalty on the cross. That's what he did. And with that substitution, he took all your penalty upon himself, but took his righteousness and placed it upon you. So what does that look like? Here's the picture I want you to get. So there are some early church fathers, Chrysostom and Ephraim the Syrian are a few of them. They believed that in the garden, Adam and Eve glowed. Their bodies glowed. There was light emanating off of their body. Even though they were naked, they had this glory, this light that shone off of them. The idea is similar to when Moses goes up on the mountain and he's with God and he comes back and his face is shining, right? It's the same as when Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. He's there with his disciples, and he allows himself to be shown all his glory, and his body is glowing, and the disciples are like, whoa, it's amazing, right? It's the same concept, this glory that's coming off of us. And there's a really good chance that when we are resurrected, that the scriptures teach that we're going to be in glory. And that may mean something else, but it may mean that our bodies are actually glorified, that they illuminate, that they glow with light because we have been cleansed. So they have this glory that is there. And then what is lost when they sin, this is the idea anyways, is that when they sin, the glory goes away. And that's what they recognize. That's the moment that they see, I'm naked and I've lost the glory that I had before. And that's what the situation that we exist in. Now, is that true? I'm not sure. It's got a good chance, but it definitely connects to this idea here. We are told that now we are clothed with Christ. Galatians chapter 3, verse 27. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have clothed yourself with Christ. We were naked and ashamed, but Christ in his mercy came and found us. And if we are willing to step into light, he clothes us with his righteousness. We are given his glory. The glory that he's on the mountain and he's transfigured and he is totally righteous. And everything is amazing about that. He's shining light off. And he took that righteousness. This is the promise that righteousness will cover you. That even though you are naked, even though you've lost all of that, that you deserve shame, now he's going to clothe you. He's going to put his righteousness, his glory on top of you. And that's how he sees you now. So, this is Christian enlightenment. That God sees you naked and bare in all your evil, and he loves you and desires you all the same. And if you step into the light, he will clothe you in glory and live with you forever. Amen. Those that step into the light will be, one, accepted by God. Two, they will have their minds enlightened to see beyond this world into the supernatural world. Number three, then their lives will transcend and show this transcendent God to the world. Number one, God's going to accept you. Number two, you're going to understand spiritual things. Number three, you're going to show the world God's glory. We will be accepted by God. He is a rewarder of those who seek him. So those that accept the light and step into it will receive the embrace of their loving Father. Then he will disclose to them spiritual truths beyond what they can naturally see. And they will be able to discern God's will, see the schemes of the devil, and place their eyes beyond this temporary life. This is exemplified in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on the earth. For as 1 Corinthians 2 says, we have been given the mind of Christ. We have been given the ability to see beyond what we see in this world. We are able to see the spiritual reality. And the one who is embraced by God and has been given the mind of Christ is able to act like God and show the light of God. That doesn't mean he becomes God. It means that God comes and uses that life to demonstrate who God is. Matthew 5, verse 16, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works, and glorify your Father who is in heaven. The works that we do are done by God himself. And so the world will see that as we shine our light, so to speak. The world will see that and then we'll glorify God for that. Those that accept the revelation of the light step into enlightenment. Their minds are enlightened and their actions are enlightened by God's spirit and used as further revelation to others lost in darkness. May we not be afraid hidden in the dark. May we be bold, confident, free to stand in the light. And may God set us ablaze with his glory to the world so that the world cannot escape his majesty. And may God have mercy on the brave who believe his promise that enlightenment can be theirs even with all their naked shame. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sing one song, and then I'm going to come up and I'm going to finish. We're going to shift gears there, and we'll do something a little different. But right now, go ahead and stand, and we'll have the band come up, and then I'll see you guys in just a second. All right, so when I gave the message, I felt bold, confident, felt good, able to really express what it was because I believe it. I believe that is the enlightenment, to be able to recognize that even in your nakedness that God still wants you. But there's also the doing it part. And I can say that that is a struggle for me. That's difficult. And I'm not doing it perfect. And I wanted to kind of walk you through what it's like on my end and some of the things that I'm going through and how I'm wrestling through my own nakedness, my own shame that I have and how I respond to that. And so I'm not nearly as confident about how I'm doing as I am that it should be done. So, struggle is difficult. So, for me, I think one of the ways that I've been wrestling and one of the ways I've been trying to improve and recognizing where I'm hiding and what I'm doing to distract other people from it is success. So, for me, work, success, how I'm perceived, how I perceive myself, that's how I hide. That's how I hide my shadow. And that here's how I know that that's it. Because the enlightened, fully enlightened, is able to go boldly, confidently, comfortably because they trust the one that's there. And there's an absolute openness and a willingness to embrace the vulnerability with coming to God before that. Here's how I know that that is my issue, is because when I think, well, if I didn't have the skills that I have, if I wasn't having the success that I was having, if I wasn't doing the things that I'm doing, how comfortable would I be going to God before that? And I went, oh no, I'm terrified of that. I'm horrified of that idea. If I lost all of that, I would be back to fifth grade feeling that embarrassment, that shame, not wanting to walk into the light. Because what that means is, for me, what I'm basing my comfort on and who I am and my identity and why I'm safe is in my work, is in my performance. And it's a bear, guys. It's a bear wrestling with your, whatever it is, whatever your issue is. It's difficult. I'm sure there's some of you in here that are doing great. And that you are enlightened as enlightened can get. And you are walking into that light. And you are accepting what comes from the Lord. Because what's coming is his love for you. But for most of us, I would think, and most of us in the church world and just about everybody else, that is not an easy thing. There is that shame and that feeling of, I do not want to walk into that. So I want you to know that that's all right if you're there. And I'm there. I'm working on it. And I'm in the process of wanting to be open with the Lord and fully vulnerable before him. And it's difficult. Guys, it's difficult to be open, is it not? Like, put it all together, man. You got it all together. You're strong. You've got it. You got it all. And that is the exact opposite of that. Being needy, being weak, and that being accepted as a good thing. But that's intimacy with Christ. People have asked me before, like, hey, what's the best part about being married? What's the best part about it? And as a married man, I can tell you that the the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life is when my wife's heart is open. When her heart is open to me, there is nothing more beautiful than that that I've ever seen in my life. And it's not even close, including my daughter. My daughter's amazing. I love my daughter. But my wife's open heart with me is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life, ever experienced. It's unbelievable. So when her heart isn't open because I'm an idiot and I did something stupid, right, and I messed it up, I feel like I'm suffocating. That's what I feel like. It feels horrible. It feels like I'm gonna die. It's like I need to get back to that beauty. So here's what it is for us. Here's why I tell you that. One, it's because she deserves it, and you should hear that about her. But two, because we as the church are Christ's bride. And what he wants is for us to have a fully open heart. Fully open, fully vulnerable, fully trusting. And that's when love flows. There's nothing in that pipe that's going to stop it. So we want to be able to do that. I want you to be free, guys. I want you to experience God's love. I want you to experience his victory. I want you to experience the full intimacy that he has for you. And this is the way forward. It's where you're able to walk to him naked, bare, all of it, and you're not hiding any of it. You're not distracting any of it. You're not trying to cover any of it. You're just going, this is who I am, and you're accepting it. And then accepting his correction of you and his changing of you. Here's what the world is telling you, right? So psychology for a long time has recognized the harmful effects of shame, right? Psychiatrists see how deadly shame is on people. And so they've been working on trying to figure out, okay, how do we get people to not feel the shame? Here's the basic response that they've had. This is who you are, just accept it. Fully accept who you are in the exact form that you are. And if you accept that, then there's no need for shame because you fully accepted what you are. You don't have to change, and you can be what you are and still have no shame. The problem is that that's a lie. That's a lie that you're right. That's a lie that you, just by yourself, don't deserve any shame. Your heart tells you otherwise. God is telling you otherwise, right? He's telling you that there are things that you're doing that are sinful and wicked and selfish. And those need to be given over to him. But to do that, you have to walk to him into the light. He'll change you. He'll correct you. He will make you new. And that's what we've been preaching here, is that when you walk into the light, when you bring it all here, he will correct you and he will make you better. I want you to have that freedom. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do an exercise in the last 10 minutes. I want you to go deep. I want you to go talk to God right now. Just where you're sitting, you can get up, you can go wherever you like. I want you to be comfortable as you can be, because you're about to talk to God and say, where am I hiding my shadow? What am I doing to distract other people from my shadow? Am I really comfortable trusting you that you're going to reward me if I come to you? So I want you to go do that. I want you to take some time and talk to the Lord and see how you feel about that. Where are you? And so you may be all in darkness. That's okay. That's all right to be there. I don't recommend you staying there, but we welcome you. We're glad you're here because we think we have a remedy for that. You may have part of your life in the darkness and part of it in the light. I want you to go talk to God about, man, what am I holding back and what am I keeping in the darkness? Or you may be all in the light. And whenever that moment comes, whether you're already in it or God is leading you that way, I want you to run to his light. I want you to run to the open. And I want you to take that brave step and connect with him. Allow him to shine his light on you. And that's how you experience his love. So go ahead and take 10 minutes. I'll dismiss us at 12 o'clock. And good luck.